What if every foreign policy disaster of the past 50 years, from Vietnam to Iraq, Afghanistan to Libya, stemmed from the same fundamental blindness? We've spent trillions of dollars and countless lives trying to export democracy to places we never truly understood. The pattern is painfully consistent. American leaders arrive with grand visions of liberation and nation-building, only to watch countries descend into chaos. We blame terrorism, religious extremism, or ancient hatreds, but the real culprit is simpler and more uncomfortable. We systematically fail to see the world as it actually is. While we speak the language of individual rights and universal values, most of the world operates on an entirely different frequency, one of tribes, clans, and ethnic allegiances that shape everything from voting patterns to violence. Understanding this tribal pulse isn't just academic, it's the difference between peace and catastrophe. America stands virtually alone as a supergroup, a nation where you can hyphenate your identity and remain fully American. Irish American, Korean American, Nigerian American. These aren't contradictions, but the essence of what makes America exceptional. Unlike China, where Han Chinese comprise 92% and define national identity, or France, which demands complete assimilation, America embraces a revolutionary idea. Citizenship transcends ancestry. This wasn't inevitable. It required civil war, civil rights struggles, and the radical 1965 immigration reforms. Birthright citizenship, the principle that anyone born on American soil is equally a citizen, remains rare globally. No Asian or European country grants it unconditionally. Yet this exceptional achievement created a dangerous blind spot. We assume other diverse countries can develop the same strong national identity. When Obama declared after Gaddafi's fall that the future of Libya is now in the hands of the Libyan people, he missed a crucial reality. The Libyan people comprised 140 different tribes with no unifying identity. They descended into civil war. Obama later called this his presidency's worst mistake. Our supergroup status made us uniquely unable to see how tribal politics actually works. For 50 years, Americans have asked how we lost to what Lyndon Johnson called a piddling, piss-ant little country. We acknowledge overlooking Vietnamese nationalism by viewing everything through a Cold War lens. But we missed something deeper, a millennia-old ethnic conflict that had nothing to do with communism. Vietnam is an ethnic nation defined by blood identity and opposition to China. Despite 1,000 years of Chinese rule, Vietnam fiercely maintained its distinct identity. When Vietnamese intellectuals opposed French colonialism in the 1920s, they simultaneously rejected Chinese influence. This made America's assumption that Vietnam was China's pawn catastrophically wrong. Our blindness to internal ethnic dynamics proved equally devastating. The Hoa ethnic Chinese in Vietnam controlled 80% of South Vietnam's industry despite being a tiny minority. They avoided military service through bribery while ethnic Vietnamese died fighting. American policies enriched them further as they handled 60% of U.S. aid imports and controlled the black market. We backed a regime that enriched the hated Chinese minority while ordinary Vietnamese suffered. When we withdrew in 1973, the socialist government targeted the Chinese, driving out over 250,000. The Vietnamese boat people Americans sympathized with were actually 85% ethnic Chinese. By 1979, Vietnam was at war with China, completely contradicting our assumption that Vietnam was a Chinese pawn. The 2003 Iraq invasion rested on a fatal comparison. Bush and Cheney looked at post-WW Germany and Japan, where overthrowing authoritarian regimes led to successful democratization, and predicted Iraqis would welcome American liberators. This ignored a crucial difference. Unlike ethnically homogeneous Japan and Germany, Iraq resembled 1990s Yugoslavia, a multi-ethnic nation with deep religious divides held together by a military dictator. Iraq's Sunni minority, roughly 15%, dominated under Saddam Hussein, who ruthlessly persecuted the Shia majority and Kurds. The Coalition Provisional Authority's de-Bothification stripped top Ba'ath party members from their jobs, then disbanded the Iraqi army, creating 250,000 to 350,000 unemployed, armed Sunni men with military training. Many joined insurgency groups. By 2015, over 60% of ISIS's leaders were former Ba'athists. America pushed immediate democratization. Political parties tracked along ethnic lines. Shias voted for Shias, Kurds for Kurds, Sunnis for Sunnis, hardening divisions rather than uniting the country. After elections gave Shias control, America backed Nouri al-Maliki for prime minister, ignoring his lifelong hatred of Sunnis. Once in power, Maliki began excluding, detaining, and executing Sunnis. This disenfranchisement directly birthed ISIS, a movement founded by Sunnis who felt persecuted by the Shia government we installed. Terrorists aren't psychopaths. Studies consistently describe them as lovely, friendly, and normal. The key insight? Terrorism isn't an individual phenomenon, but a murderous expression of tribal politics. Groups profoundly shape our perception of reality. In the Robbers Cave experiment, boys divided into teams consistently overestimated their own members' performance. Intelligence doesn't overcome these biases, it amplifies them. Yale research shows people with stronger analytical skills are more likely to manipulate data supporting their political tribe's worldview. Islam Yakin exemplifies this transformation. A middle-class Cairo fitness trainer, he became intensely devout after losing a friend. When Egypt's political system disappointed him, he left for Syria, becoming an ISIS poster boy who achieved status he couldn't find at home. The key driver isn't poverty, but group inequality, stark disparities along ethnic, religious, or sectarian lines. Islamic terrorism thrives on the belief that Muslims as a group are being attacked by the West. Successful extremist groups offer what society doesn't: tribal belonging, purpose, enemies to hate, and a chance to transform group humiliation into triumph. America faces the same tribal divisions fracturing developing nations, a widening chasm between haves and have-nots driving political chaos. America's poor are less politically engaged, but intensely tribal. The Sovereign Citizens Movement, with 300,000 followers, surged after the 2008 recession. Members believe America's legitimate government was secretly replaced, and Social Security numbers create contracts enslaving citizens. America's 27,000 street gangs represent another tribal group. Often racially or ethnically defined, gangs offer disaffected youth what the system doesn't: status, community, and upward mobility. Though most end up imprisoned or dead by 20, gangs provide their best perceived shot at the American dream. NASCAR's 75 million fans proudly embrace white, working-class origins, demonstrating extreme brand loyalty, three times more likely than other sports fans to buy team-sponsored products. Gotta drink Budweiser. If you ain't drinking Budweiser, you don't belong here. Professional wrestling illuminates Trump's success. WWE represents everything coastal elites despise: gaudy, fake, bombastic, violent, hyper-masculine. Trump actually battled WWE founder Vince McMahon in the ring. For supporters, showmanship and symbolism matter more than literal truth. Where progressives saw an uncivilized brute, Trump supporters saw Hulk Hogan, a dominating hero promising to vanquish evil. Despite tribal divisions, transformation remains possible. Research shows genuine human connection dismantles prejudice. The U.S. military exemplifies this. Desegregated units performed as well or better than segregated ones. As one Vietnam Marine reflected, "If I was pinned down by enemy fire and I needed an M79 man, I'd scream for Thompson because he was the best. I didn't even think about what color Thompson was." American attitudes towards same-sex marriage shifted dramatically, from 11% support in 1988 to 62% today, largely because 75% of Americans now know someone gay, compared to just 24% in 1985. As Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg observed, once people began to say who they were, Americans found it was your next-door neighbor, or it could be your child. Superficial contact can worsen divisions. What's needed is genuine connection revealing shared humanity. Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton used an all-minority cast to portray founding fathers, acknowledging racism while affirming America's transcendent principles. What holds America together is the American dream, not denying failures, but recognizing them as part of our story. As Langston Hughes wrote, "America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be." That tension between aspiration and reality defines American exceptionalism.